Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Welcome to Feedback Friday. I'm your host, Jordan Harbinger. As always, I'm here with my Feedback Friday producer, my comrade in kibitzing, Gabriel Mizrahi. On the Jordan Harbinger Show, we decode the stories, secrets, and skills of the world's most fascinating people and turn their wisdom into practical advice that you can use to impact your own life and those around you. We want to help you see the matrix when it comes to how these amazing people think and behave, and our mission is to help you become a better informed, more critical thinker so you can get a much deeper understanding of how the world works and make sense of what's really happening even inside your own mind. If you're new to the show, on Fridays we give advice, we answer listener questions. The rest of the week we have long-form interviews and conversations with a variety of incredible people from spies to CEOs, athletes, authors, thinkers, and performers. And this week we had Dr. Kevin Dutton. He is a psychopath expert. And this is a two-part episode. We're talking about what makes a psychopath, the psychopath test, some elements of psychopathy that were pretty surprising, and how you can use magnets, basically, to turn yourself into a psychopath, an experiment I may run on myself. Not that I need any more of that, but we'll see how it goes. Make sure you've had a listen to everything we created for you here this week.
Before we dive in today, Jordan, a little update. We got a letter, another letter from the cross-dressing guy who wrote in a few weeks back.
Did he tell us what he was wearing, though? That's the important part of those of those emails.
Sadly, he did not tell us what his wardrobe was when he wrote the letter. Yeah.
What a cliffhanger.
I know, such a disappointment. But anyway, for those of you who didn't catch this one, a guy wrote in with an absolutely wild life story. So he's a cross-dresser. He had an affair with another guy. He's married to a woman.
And he's like 73 years old, though.
Yes. The guy he had an affair with ended up dying from COVID. He grieved this guy in private. His son had walked in on him cross-dressing when he was young. And then they tragically lost that son to an overdose. And then they found out later that the son was a cross-dresser. And he and his wife were struggling to work through all of that. There was a lot going on in this letter. That was episode 753, by the way, if you want to give it a listen.
Right. And his main question was, what do I do with my collection of lingerie? Do I destroy my clothes before they destroy me? It's like skipping over all the important stuff, but what do I do with my clothes?
Right. And also, I can't wear my wife's clothes because they're so boring and plain. That was my favorite part of the letter.
Well, they have different taste.
Right. And our response was basically, my dude, the clothes are the least of your problems.
Right.
You're sitting on all of these huge secrets. You might want to think about opening up about, you know, what you've been through. So after the episode aired, he wrote us again and he said, thanks for highlighting my letter. Your comments were accurate and insightful. I did not realize that I am a locked box that takes a lot of attention to keep each side separate, a useful analogy describing how my secrets are stressors in my life. I thought maybe my son seeing me cross-dressing gave him the idea slash permission that it was an okay thing to do. I don't really know why that guy and I had our affair. Neither one of us felt that we were gay or bi. We were only into each other. Go figure. By the way, after I wrote in, I asked my wife if it was okay to wear her old panties, and she said, okay, but no to bras. I like the selection of links in the show notes, but I did not get the audio at 6 minutes in. Signed, Content in the Closet.
Wow. Well, that pretty much fits with the original letter, doesn't it?
It does sound like he's determined to stay a locked box. Yeah.
It's kind of a bummer. I was hoping he'd realize he's been hanging on to all this and decide to open up. But I know that it's a tall order at 70-something years old. It's probably very scary for him to fully come out at this point. There's just, it's too much at risk.
On the plus side, though, he does get to wear his wife's underwear now. So I guess that's the win.
That is a win. At least she's somewhat accepting of him now, except I'm puzzled by the you can wear my panties, but not my bras. Like, is it not weirder to wear your wife's panties than it is to wear her bras? I would have thought the other way around for sure.
I'm not really clear on the logic there. Maybe because the bra is more visible. Is that what he means? Like, if they go to the market together, no one would know that he's wearing her old thong. Ugh. But if he's wearing a bra, people are going to stare. I don't know.
I could be. I mean, I suppose that part might make some sense. I'm not really clear on a lot of this guy's life, to be honest. But hey, it's his life, his marriage. At least he and his wife are talking about this. She's accepting him to some degree. The audio, by the way, that was 6 minutes in, that's Buffalo Bill from Silence of the Lambs. He does some sort of cross-dressing in the movie, And he says it rubs the lotion on its skin. Actually, he says it rubs the lotion on its skin or else it gets the hose again. And I I think he's talking
killer
about
impression right there.
Yeah, it's kind of he does that weird fake low voice. And I think he's talking the about the suit of skin that he creates from his murder victims, which is whatever. The soundbite was a dumb joke. Just having a little laugh here. We don't think that you're turning people into a lampshade or anything. It's just where my mind went when Gabe read the letter. Like I said during the episode, more of a me problem. Anyway, interesting update. Thank you for sharing it. I'm sure it was a lot to take in, but I really do hope that you find the support that you need. You and your wife. And again, I appreciate you being so vulnerable with us. I know that this cannot be easy. It just means a lot. And yet another thing that differentiates you from Buffalo Bill. So,
yeah, good point. Not a very vulnerable serial killer.
No, no, generally not. As always, we've got some fun ones, some doozies. Can't wait to dive in. Gabe, what is the first thing out of the mailbag?
Hi, Jordan and Gabe. A little over a year ago, my best friend of 10 years revealed that she's gay. She sought a divorce from her husband and moved into another home with a woman she had only known a few months. A year later, she was engaged to the new girlfriend. Mm. I tried to maintain a close relationship with my friend, but I really didn't understand her decision to trust a person she barely knew with her money and her children. I walked the tightrope of being a good listener while not engaging or encouraging her in trashing her ex, the father of her children, whom I've always known as a pretty stand-up guy. During their marriage, he had to deal with finding her after several suicide attempts, rushing her to the ER, and taking a lot of responsibility for caring for their kids before she began her recovery. Recently, she made the decision to sue him for full custody and has filed a number of accusations against him. Many can be refuted with proof, and some are moments where he wasn't his best self, but he admitted it, apologized for it, and worked to do better. When she decided to sue him for full custody, she understood my desire to remain neutral, but also told me she couldn't hang out with me anymore because she, quote, needed to be around people that were fully on my side, unquote. Her ex has now asked me to testify as a character witness at the custody trial. She's told me some stories about him that are concerning, but I don't know if I believe them. My observations have been that he's incredibly patient with her and that he takes good care of his kids. But I'm afraid I owe it to my friend not to testify because we had a friendship based on deep trust and candor where we shared things we wouldn't want exposed. And I'm afraid that testifying might violate that trust. On the other hand, I don't have any problem saying that our ex doesn't deserve to lose joint custody. I believe he should continue to have his parenting time with his kids. What should I do? Signed, comply and testify? Or stand by tongue-tied while this whole trial goes awry?
Oh, wow. Tongue-tied indeed. This is a sad story. It's a very tough situation to be in just as a friend.
Yeah.
Caught between these two people, not knowing how involved you should get in their affairs. So first of all, I just got to say this woman, she sounds like a real piece of work. I guess I have some compassion for her because she's obviously wrestling with some very intense mental health struggles. I'm glad she's finally working on those. That's great news. But you've painted a picture of somebody who, frankly, sounds quite unstable, sounds impulsive, sounds kind of reckless. And I'm not even talking about her coming out and dating a woman. That's fine. Her orientation is honestly beside the point. But to move your kids into a new person's home after just a few months, and then you're engaged a year later, it does seem fast. And now she's punishing her ex and suing for full custody for reasons that aren't totally clear and might even be, you know, kind of fabricated. So yeah, I feel for this guy. He might lose his kids to this woman. And he might not have even done the things that she said he did.
Or, look, maybe they're both out of their freaking tree and this whole marriage was just a hot mess for both of them. I mean, that's possible too, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, they could both be to blame here. Maybe they bring out the worst in each other. Although from what the letter writer shared, it really does sound like he's the more stable parent here, according to the letter writer. That's all we got, right?
It does. Yeah,
and he puts, that puts you in the position of having to decide whether to step up and vouch for this guy. So here's what I'm thinking. First of all, this bind you're in between wanting to help him and wanting to honor the terms of the friendship you had with your friend, I can appreciate that conflict. I'm not sure how much of a bind that really is, because you're no longer really friends with this woman. That was her choice. When you decided to stay neutral, which I think was a fair decision given the facts available to you, she cut you off. She couldn't tolerate a friend who wasn't 100% behind her in a situation which, at a minimum, I think it's fair to say, somewhat ambiguous. And look, if that's what she needed to do, fine, that's her right. But that kind of black and white, all or nothing thinking, that might be part of this woman's mental health stuff and just her general worldview. And that's part of the problem as well, because here you are going, hang on a minute, you both bear some responsibility here, didn't work out, you both deserve to be in your kids' lives. I'm not sure this is as clear-cut as you think. And she's going, well, if you're not 100% behind me, we can't even be friends. I need to be around people who are fully on my side. And I think that says a lot about her. Mm-hmm. So from where I'm sitting, this woman has changed the terms of your friendship. And I know it's tricky. That's sort of a lawyerly thing to say. I get it. But I know it's tricky because she shared things with you in confidence when you guys were still close. And you want to honor that, which says a lot about you. But now her ex and her children might suffer in a huge way if you don't speak up. And I feel that that sort of trumps the tacit confidentiality of a questionable friendship that no longer even exists. Gabe, is that fair? Am I being too callous here?
Well, first of all, that JD really paying off in this question.
Finally.
Yeah, so lawyerly. Okay, no, but...
Good. $168,000 well spent. You're welcome.
Worth every penny. Mm. I think you're making a very fair point. Look, just being practical here, standing up for this guy in a terrible situation, I do think that trumps the we said things to each other in confidence and I can't violate that trust thing. So maybe a better way to think about this is if you didn't testify and this woman ended up getting full custody of the kids and her ex could barely see them, would you be happy you stayed out of it or would you wish you had agreed to testify?
Oh, good little test there, Gabriel. And that's something only she can answer for herself. But I know if this was me, I'd be in the courtroom spilling all the dang tea, filling in some much needed gaps. I just couldn't sleep at night knowing I could have saved this guy's relationship with his children, but I didn't have the guts to do it.
The only wrinkle for me is how reliable these narrators are. Obviously, her ex-friend, not a reliable narrator. In fact, she seems, I mean, look, we're going off of her letter, yeah, but it sounds like she's blatantly making things up to get what she wants. But how reliable of a narrator her ex-husband is, also a little unclear, because he obviously has his agenda here. He's probably not telling her all the stuff he might have done in his worst moments. And our friend here, she wasn't with this family every second of every day. She might have seen him be patient with the ex and great with the kids, but who knows what happened behind closed doors? Nobody knows. And as we know, crazy people can easily keep up appearances to the outside world and you would never know.
Yeah, fair point. I'm actually a huge pain in the ass behind closed doors. So I tend to agree. You can just ask Jen.
Yeah, big monster. Famously a monster.
Famously just a horrible person. Yeah. But just to zoom way out here for a moment, even if this guy didn't always act as well as he should have, and again, we don't know what that even means. We don't know if he snapped at his ex-wife a few times or if he pushed her or what. Obviously, if he was truly abusive, that changes the math here.
Sure.
But if this guy was just kind of a mess while his wife was in and out of the ER and struggling to get a grip on her life,
right,
it's somewhat understandable.
Yeah.
It doesn't change the fact that he's the more stable parent here and he still deserves to be in his kids' lives. And maybe because I'm a father and I can sort of imagine how utterly heartbreaking it would be to not see my kids very much if my ex took them away for literally no good reason, like actually no good reason, I think that's what matters most here.
Yeah, fair point.
So again, not knowing all the inside baseball and what this guy did or didn't do, that's our take. I think you have to step up here and testify. If I were this guy, I would really hope my friends would stand by me and speak up, because this decision is really important and it's going to impact several people's lives in a huge way, including these vulnerable kids who did nothing to deserve whatever kind of crap they're going through right now. And just balance that with a healthy degree of skepticism, which you're already doing, so that you can testify with as many of the facts at your disposal as you can, and you can feel secure that you're testifying for the right side, or at least the better side. But again, it really does sound like you are. I admire your thoughtfulness and your conviction. We're wishing you and this family, especially those kids, all the best. You know what you should definitely get sole custody of in a breakup? The products and services that support this show.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
We'll be right back. Thank you for listening to and supporting this show. Your support of our advertisers keeps the lights on around here. All the links, all the deals, all the discount codes for the advertisers and the sponsors are at jordanharbinger.com/deals. You can also search for any sponsor using the search box on the website as well. So please consider supporting those who support this show. Now, back to Feedback Friday. All right, next up.
Dear Jordan and Gabe, I'm an early 30s man looking for a serious relationship. But 7 years ago, I was diagnosed with an incurable, debilitating illness that restricts my life. Something similar to long COVID. I'm fortunate that my case is mild enough that I'm able to remain gainfully employed for now, and from the outside, I lead a normal life. But behind the scenes, I struggle every moment of every day with this illness, constantly fighting lethargy, malaise, and brain fog. I'm able to spend time with friends and go on dates, but the next day, I am wiped out. It's already very difficult finding a partner, and I have very little doubt that being open about my diagnosis would make it effectively impossible. I know that at some point in a relationship, I will inevitably have to divulge this information, but I'd rather wait as long as I can. Incidentally, I have zero interest in having children, which I'm upfront about with all of my prospective partners, so that's not a complicating factor here. Is it unfair or immoral to get into a serious relationship without disclosing my illness until a ways down the road? How much should I reveal? And when? Signed, relay this malaise or delay this phase and kick it down the road a ways?
Really good question. So yes, I do think it's unfair to get into a serious relationship with somebody without disclosing a chronic illness. I think that's somewhat manipulative, actually. I think it'll only create more of a problem down the line when the gal in question realizes you've been hiding something significant from her for a while. But I also feel like your condition is pretty hard to hide, given that it takes such a toll on you. If you feel exhausted the day after a date, if you're constantly lethargic, you have brain fog, I mean, she's going to notice that. Mm. Or she's going to at least start to wonder, especially as you guys spend more time together. And then you're going to have to work pretty damn hard to explain why you can only hang out every 2 or 3 days, or why you need to go home randomly after dinner to take a 3-hour nap. I mean, the lies are just going to compound, and it's only going to make things worse. So my question for you is, why do you feel the need to wait as long as possible? And I'm sure the obvious answer is that you don't want people to write you off too soon. I get it, okay? I can definitely appreciate why having a chronic illness creates some anxiety in the dating arena, maybe also some shame. But I find it interesting that you're very upfront with people about not wanting to have children, which is arguably even more of a deal breaker for many people.
Right. He's willing to risk disqualifying a lot of women for a preference that he's actively chosen, but not because of a condition that he didn't choose at all. I think that's actually very interesting.
Exactly. I mean, we've all heard those stories of guys that don't tell their significant other they don't want kids until they're about to get married or maybe even after. Like, actually, I don't want kids. It's like, what?
What?
Right. This guy, meanwhile, is like, nah, I'm going to screen everyone hard, but God forbid I scare him off with this thing. I mean, what is it about talking about the illness that feels so dangerous? Which can, so to speak, are you really kicking down the road by delaying this conversation? Mm-hmm. What would come up for you if you brought this up to somebody on date 2, date 3? What would you risk? That's what I'd want to know.
Great questions. I can definitely appreciate the anxiety he feels about this condition as well. Who knows? Maybe somebody did write him off for this in the past and he doesn't want that to happen again. And that is fair. I understand that. But there is a mitigating factor here in my view, which is the way you talk about this illness, that will play such a huge role in how women respond to it. If you fully own it, if you're like, so listen, I have this thing, it's kind of a bummer, I get really tired sometimes, sometimes I get a little brain foggy, gotta take a nap, or I'm not as like focused as I usually am, but I'm determined to not let it stop me from enjoying my life, I don't want it to stop me from having a relationship. It just means that I have to take it easy sometimes after I socialize, so there it is. If you say something like that, I think a lot of people will go, okay, fatigue, brain fog, I get it, especially after COVID, right? A lot of people get it. Mm-hmm. That sucks, but I like you, and I really like your attitude about this. I think I can live with that. That is easily how this could go. But if you hide this for weeks or even months, and you're shifty about why you go MIA for 3 days, and then when you finally do tell the person, you're like staring into space, and you're giving this whole like, please don't leave me because I'm not perfect vibe, then yeah, that might make women think that this is a bigger deal than it is. And that might be what drives them away, not the condition itself.
Totally. Yeah. Gabe, I'm just realizing this is very similar to the question we took last week from the woman who had left the whole purity culture church world and just wasn't sure how to talk about it with new guys.
Yes. Yes. It's exactly like that.
She was trying to figure out how to tell people that she was in an evangelical church that she left. And that's why she has basically no experience with dating.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, these stories are very different, but the thing that they have in common is that both of you guys have some anxiety and some shame around your stories. And that was episode 774, by the way. I would definitely give that a listen. So yeah, the more you can explore that shame, the more you can work through it so you can get to a point where you say, hey, this is me, this is my condition, just want you to know, the easier this is going to be.
Yeah, and he doesn't even need to get to a point where he's completely free of the shame in order to talk about this. He could even say, listen, I'm kind of embarrassed by this. I wish I didn't have this condition, but hey, I like you. I'm excited to keep hanging out with you. And yeah, I think it's only fair that you know this about me. Even that would be a huge step forward for him.
I agree. And you know what? Women might even respond even more strongly to that because that is real confidence. Not pretending you're not ashamed about something, but being willing to acknowledge that maybe you kind of are.
Yeah. And look, it doesn't have to be on his Hinge profile, right?
Right.
He doesn't even have to bring it up on the very first date or even the second date. But if the relationship could go somewhere, yeah, bringing it up early on, I do believe that's the right thing to do and the easier thing to do.
100%. And if he does that a few times, he finds that people don't go running for the hills, I think he's going to start to rewrite this fear of his.
Definitely.
So good luck out there, man. I love how open you are to looking at this in a new way. Take care of yourself. And we're crossing our fingers that you find a girl who hates kids and loves naps, which, by the way, a lot of people, a lot of people love naps.
A lot of people.
And cuddling and watching Netflix. And that Venn diagram is a legit circle. You could reach us Friday at jordanharbinger.com. Please keep your emails concise. Try to use a descriptive subject line. That makes our job a lot easier. If there's something you're going through, a big decision you're wrestling with, or if you just need a new perspective on stuff, life, love, work, what to do when your friend turns into an unhinged bridezilla, whatever's got you staying up at night lately, hit us up Friday at jordanharbinger.com. We're here to help, and we keep every email anonymous. All right, what's next?
Hi, Jordan and Gabe. I'm in my late 20s and work as a writer for a small marketing agency. The company has gone downhill fast this year. We've had major financial losses, and our CEO has done little to address this. Plus, my workload just tripled after two people quit in the last month, and I hear rumors of more people leaving soon. I realized after this year that I actually want to switch careers and break into human resources after doing a bunch of HR-related work, which I found really rewarding. But there have been few job postings lately, as it's the end of the year. I also don't have any formal education in HR that I feel I need for even entry-level roles. I do have emergency savings to last me about 3 months if I left, but I'm worried that still might not be enough depending on the job market. Also, my paycheck enables me to live fairly well. Do I quit now and save my mental health, work on my skills, and hope to find a job soon? Or do I stick it out as long as I can while searching, despite the fact that it feels like I'm on a sinking ship? Signed, take a risk and jump ship quick, or stick with the script while I stack these bricks.
Yeah, very common scenario and a good question. I'm sorry that your company is struggling. I know it can really be demoralizing and stressful to be on a sinking ship. It's just no fun. But I love that you've stumbled into something you really care about. That is very exciting. So look, if I were you, I would stay put. I would go into aggressive job hunting mode. And I say that for a few reasons. First of all, it's generally easier to find a job when you have a job, partly because, yeah, you can keep that paycheck, you can use it to fund your job search, and you won't have to stress about money and finding a new job at the same time, which can get kind of intense. Sometimes it can even make you a little desperate, like maybe you accept a job you don't love because you really need the money, and suddenly you're unhappy in a different way. Whereas if you stuck it out, you might have some more runway to find the job that you truly love. Second, yeah, the job market is weird right now. It might take 3, 4, 5 months to find a job, maybe longer, even if you're highly qualified. So quitting now and living off savings, it's kind of a risk. Not a totally crazy risk, but it is a risk. Also, yeah, things are stressful at your job. The rats are fleeing the ship. Your workload is tripled. I get it. But you sound like a level-headed person. It sounds like you're managing the stress fairly well. So I wonder if you'd get more out of staying and being highly motivated to find another job than you would out of just leaving entirely. That said, if you are truly miserable, if this company is just a total shit show and you're a mess and all the work is leaving you zero time to reach out to people and book interviews and learn these new HR skills, that's a different story. Then maybe you do need to leave just for sanity's sake and to refocus. But then I would figure out how much time you truly need to learn those skills and position yourself as a qualified HR expert. There's probably a way to create that narrative in, I don't know, 3 months. And if you have a killer network, you might be able to slip into a new job pretty quickly. But realistically, between doing your homework and doing trainings and getting a cert or two and building your brand and meeting the right people, I think it's going to take longer than 3 months. So I would take a moment to get clear with yourself on whether you need a wide open ocean in front of you to make this transition, or if you can really do it during nights and weekends. And also whether doing it during nights and weekends might actually make your job more tolerable, knowing there's light at the end of the tunnel, you kind of have the keys to the prison, so to speak. And my advice, start with the relationship building piece. Talk to folks in the HR world if you're not doing that already. Get a sense of what opportunities are out there, what you need to do to position yourself for these HR jobs, what these employers need to see from you, all that stuff. They'll know the answers to all of these questions, and that'll help you come up with a plan. And you need to be meeting these people anyway, so you're killing two birds with one stone. My only other idea, if you stick around for more than another 2-3 months, maybe ask your employer for a raise. I know that's dicey because things are rocky, but if multiple people are quitting, you might be able to go to your boss and say, listen, I know times are tough, I'm happy to pick up the slack, but I need a little more money if I'm going to be doing 3 times the work. It's only fair, that'll allow me to keep doing great work for you. And maybe they give you a third or half what one of those other employees was making, and you'll feel better about putting in so much work. And more money will mean you'll have more resources to invest in your rebrand, which again, that's a huge asset. So that's my take. Weigh the hit to your mental health against the upside to staying. Only you can answer that. But in general, unless you're being truly abused at work or you're absolutely friggin' miserable, you can probably find a relationship to your current job that doesn't drag you down and use it to fund or run, give you runway for your next chapter. So good luck. I have a feeling there are some exciting things ahead and you'll end up somewhere great. You know what'll help you cope with a hostile work environment, Gabriel?
The products and services.
Let me just stop you right there. The products and services that support the show. We'll be right back. If you like this episode of Feedback Friday and found our advice valuable, I invite you to do what other smart and considerate listeners do. Take a moment and support our sponsors. All of our deals are at jordanharbinger.com/deals. All the codes, all the discount URLs, all that jazz. jordanharbinger.com/deals. You can also search for any sponsor using the search box on the website as well. Thank you very much for supporting those who support us. It makes it possible for us to do these shows week after week. Now, back to Feedback Friday. All right, what's next?
Hi, Jordan and Gabe. I've recently been going through something of a therapeutic breakthrough, in no small part thanks to your show. I've been able to process most of my traumas, understand what's happening in my own mind, and build a healthier outlook on life. One unexpected side effect of this growth, however, has been a reintroduction of anger into my emotional life after a long time. Because of my past trauma, I learned to internalize blame for situations large and small, and often felt guilt rather than anger. This new anger is never unjustified. I've always had a strong sense of justice, whether it's a coworker who makes an insensitive comment, or a simple mistake that ends up doing real harm to somebody. I now find a seething, white-hot rage where before I felt nothing. My conscious mind knows to wait until I can think clearly, approach the person from a place of compassion and understanding, and try to reach a healthy and positive outcome. So, what does a healthy relationship with anger look like for most people, where you allow yourself to attribute blame to the appropriate parties without having a meltdown? And what's the best way to channel this disproportionate feeling of rage towards something positive? Signed, Calibrating My Mind and Staying Benign, as this feeling comes back online.
Fuck it, man. Let it fly. Fuck them. They're fucking morons. But seriously, fucking great question. But for real, first of all, congrats on all this amazing work you've done. I think that's really inspiring. I do love that the show has played a small part in that. That is awesome. You sound like a really curious and thoughtful person. I am sure that that's a big part of this breakthrough that you're having. So yeah, this is actually kind of fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
When you start working through your stuff, when you get in touch with parts of yourself that were punished or denied or somehow cut off, you often find yourself in touch with all sorts of feelings. For some people, it's fear. For some people, it's shame. And for a lot of people, it's anger, man.
Yeah. Especially people who deal with depression.
Yeah. There's this whole depression is anger turned inward concept.
Yeah, totally. Which fits with this thing he said about guilt. That's kind of classic inverted anger, right?
Mm.
Like you get mad, but you don't feel that that anger can legitimately go anywhere. So you don't express it. You keep it inside. You take it on yourself, which is basically what internalizing is. And then it often gets converted into guilt or shame, or in a lot of cases, just this kind of blunted nothing.
Right. Because it's like, oh, I couldn't tell my mom I was mad at her for what she said. So I just secretly seethe and then I feel guilty for being so sensitive mm-hmm. or for not being a better son or for mm-hmm. not knowing how to speak up or whatever the case may be.
Yes, exactly. It could be any number of things. Anyway, look, we don't know if this guy was actually depressed, but that might be part of what he was dealing with before he started to get back in touch with all of these interesting feelings.
I think it might be. Yeah. So getting back in touch with this anger, this is all very healthy. This is what is supposed to happen. And by the way, just one of the many reasons we're such big believers in therapy, the more you can be in touch with all these feelings, the more you can invite them in, work through them, the less they'll dictate your life in the way they tend to when they're repressed. But it's such a good question. What does a healthy relationship with anger look like? Because we all know people who are very in touch with their anger, but they're maniacs, right? They're screaming at the valet guy. They're snapping at their kids. They're going ham on Twitter. That is not healthy either.
Mm-mm.
So first of all, I think you're already on the right track here. The fact that you can even ask this question, it just tells me you're bringing a lot of awareness to these feelings. Unstable people, they are not asking this question. They're just reacting.
Yeah, the ex-wife from question one isn't going, what's a healthy relationship to my anger, right? Like, what's a healthy relationship to my sadness? Is it taking my kids away from my ex? Like, that's not part of her conversation.
Yeah, she's completely out of touch with that stuff, for sure. She might be in touch with a lot of big feelings, mm-hmm. but that woman, she is at the whim of those feelings.
Right.
They are jerking her around. Mm-hmm. And now she's trying to control her kids because of that. That's not you. So that's great. Another important thing is being able to feel your anger, being able to express that anger when it's appropriate, but also being able to acknowledge your role in a situation.
Mm-hmm.
That's when you can look at your colleague who said that snarky thing in a meeting and think, okay, you know, that was kind of messed up. That didn't make me feel very good. I think I'm going to say something, but also maybe I need to figure out why that comment made me so angry. Is he right mm-hmm. on some level? Is he pushing a button I didn't know was there? Am I reading some intent into what he said? Whatever it is. The more you can straddle your anger and another person's position and also try to view things from kind of a neutral perspective, where maybe somebody pissed you off, but they didn't intend to, or it doesn't mean what you think it means, the more you'll know whether your anger is really justified or whether it has to be like an 8 when it could be maybe a 3.
And to your credit, you're already doing that. You like to wait. You try to approach the other person from a place of compassion, reach a positive outcome. You're doing great. As for the best way to channel this disproportionate feeling of rage towards something positive, I'm thinking about that question we took a while back from the guy who had severe eco anxiety. Jordan, do you remember that?
I do remember that guy. Yeah, he was terrified of what was happening to the environment, but like way more than it was interrupting him being able to function in life.
Yes, yes. He had this like overwhelming sense of dread.
Yes.
And our advice there was find a project, ideally something very specific, very doable, and channel your anxiety into doing something good for the world, because your anxiety thrives in the abstract. But once you say, okay, I am spinning out about, you know, the Great Barrier Reef, so I'm going to raise $500 for the Ocean Project, or I'm going to tell my friends to support this cause, whatever you decide to do, that anxiety is in service of something and it'll probably start to ratchet down. The anxiety is still there. You're not suppressing it. You're not denying it, but it's probably not as debilitating as it was. And now it has a function, which means it has meaning because you're using it to do something good.
Right, right. So we could say the same thing about anger. Channel it. Mm-hmm. Don't just let it fester or consume you. Use it to act in some way. I feel like Obi-Wan Kenobi saying that, but you know what I mean.
Yes, exactly. So maybe that means you approach the other person and just talk about the problem openly. Like, you can be angry and still want to work on the solution. That's great. Or maybe you use the anger to motivate you to, I don't know, change a certain policy at your work or shift the relationship with that colleague who pissed you off. Or, hey, just keep exploring your anger in therapy. Or if the anger is so extreme and there's no way to fix it, find a new job where you don't have to deal with toxic colleagues anymore. These are all good options. Or again, maybe when you feel the anger rising up, you go, ah, okay, this is how I feel when people aren't very nice to me, when they're not very thoughtful. This doesn't feel good. So yeah, I'm going to make an effort to not make my other colleagues feel this way. That's always a great use of an unpleasant feeling when the situation can't change.
Totally. The whole, this person made me feel a certain way, so I'm not going to make other people feel that way. That by itself is a pretty good use of anger. That goes a long way. Mm-hmm. So there you have it. And this is actually a great reminder for me that feeling all the feels is half the battle, but knowing what to do with the feels is the other half. Mm-hmm. And that's where it really gets interesting.
Yeah.
Because these feelings can lead you in so many different directions, and choosing to channel them into productive directions, to use them to learn about yourself, build better relationships rather than, I don't know, dragging your beleaguered ex-husband into a courtroom to dominate your kids after you abandon them multiple times and rush into an impulsive engagement, that's a superpower. Enlightened rage, Gabe. What an interesting concept that would be.
Well said.
All right, what's next?
Hi, Jordan and Gabe. About 2 years ago, a new tenant moved into my small, safe apartment building. Since then, many of my packages have gone missing, despite receiving messages from the sender confirming delivery. We also have a shared storage area, and after her arrival, some of my belongings disappeared. When I noticed this pattern, I started having my packages delivered to my workplace and stopped storing items in the shared storage space. That worked fine until I couldn't have items shipped to an alternative address. Once again, items delivered to my apartment would go missing if she was home. Recently, I loudly vocalized my frustrations about all of this on the phone with a friend. The next morning, I saw an empty box addressed to me on top of the trash receptacle outside. Even more frustrating is that my neighbor doesn't appear to steal from anyone but me. I would address this issue directly with her if she weren't so unstable. When I researched her on social media, I found several videos of her driving down the street shooting rounds into the air.
What? This person is insane. Holy shit. Jeez.
I've also heard her engage in physical altercations with visitors during arguments. I spoke with my landlord, and they're refusing to intervene without proof. I was recommended to purchase a Ring doorbell to provide evidence of her theft. But since the doorbell would have to be installed in a common area, she would likely steal it, leaving me without any recourse. Do you have any other ideas on how I can catch this woman in the act and put an end to all of this? Signed, Sitting Here Reeling, While My Neighbor Is Stealing.
This is so, I'm not going to lie, I'm pretty excited about this question.
I had a feeling you would be. This is right up your alley.
I mean, batshit crazy neighbor, physical security, crime. This is just three of my favorite genres mashed right together.
I'm excited. I love when physical security Jordan comes out. It's like a whole other Jordan. Let's do this.
Oh, he's out. All right, let's talk about how to take this piece of work down. Friggin' Kathleen, the crazy klepto. So, okay. Obvious answer, get a UPS box, problem solved. But we're not going to do that, right? We're not going to do that. We're not letting her get away with this. First of all, my goodness, what an infuriating piece of crap neighbor to have.
Yeah.
I'm sorry you've been dealing with this maniac. She just sounds like an absolute... Well, first of all, she is a criminal and should be in prison. Or just like, who drives around shooting? What an absolute piece of crap.
It's actually very dangerous, right? Like, shooting into the air is not a good idea.
Highly illegal, yeah. Also. You can't just drive around shooting guns into the air. This isn't like rural Lebanon, dude. Stealing shit from your neighbors?
That's actually a crime, though, isn't it? Shooting into the air is a crime in most states.
Of course. Yeah. You have to be on your own land. There's all kinds of guidelines around this. You don't just drive around. I think shooting from a vehicle, period, is illegal in pretty much every circumstance. Other than you have some sort of designated training range for Navy SEALs or something. Come on. Stealing stuff from your neighbors, just unforgivable. This actually happened to me when we lived in our last house. It was infuriating. I've got a story about that I think I told on the show that ended up on TV. But the fact that this woman is so unstable, that definitely makes things trickier. I mean, Kathleen really be out there firing live rounds out of her Toyota Corolla and posting it on Instagram. She's putting her house guests into chokeholds. This woman is kind of scary. Of course, only somebody unhinged like this would steal packages from her neighbor and then just think, I can get away with it and I can do whatever I want.
So true. I'm also pretty annoyed with this landlord, though.
Yeah, same. They should have asked Kathleen if anything has been going on, put her on notice a little bit.
Or at least offer to set up cameras or something. I mean, they have an interest in keeping the building safe, too.
Of course. And yeah, that's not cool. But I also understand their position to some degree. They're probably cheap, like many landlords are. They can't do anything meaningful without proof. They're expecting her to do that. So fine. Mm-hmm. That's just how it is. They don't live there, obviously, because if they did, they would care because they would live there. Mm-hmm. So I have two strategies to nab Kathleen, and I would do them in this order. First, I would buy a few AirTags. If you don't know, AirTags are like tiny trackers. They're sort of like Bluetooth trackers. They don't use Bluetooth, as far as I understand, but they allow you to keep tabs on stuff. They're like $30 each. There's, I think, $100 for a pack of four. I would buy a couple relatively cheap items. I'm talking something Kathleen's going to keep, like a DVD player or a pair of headphones or a jewelry box with a false bottom, something like that. Stick the AirTags inside them and ship the items to yourself. You should probably do 2, 3, even 4 of these packages separately to make sure that she keeps at least one of them and hopefully establish a real pattern. That, because if she gets one, she's going to go, oh, I took it in with the rest of my mail. Mm-hmm. I didn't even see it. You know, but if she's got one week, one the next week, one the next week, and one the next week, she's stealing your mail and it's hard for her to be like, oh, oops. Then I would leave the packages in the mail room or on your front door for a while. Let her steal them. And then you open up the app on your phone. You watch those AirTags go from your apartment to the shipping center back to your building and end up in Kathleen's apartment or in the trash, probably in her apartment in the item. You can literally see it happening right there in real time. You screenshot the locations of the AirTag on your phone, document everything. Boom. That is the proof you need. Because that now Apple is vouching for the item being in this person's apartment. No one has to take your word for it. It's in there. The second thing I would do, I would purchase a Ring camera or even two. Any type of camera will do. You'll probably have to get your landlord's permission to set them up in common areas, but they should be on board with that. You might need a sign or something. Point them at the mail area and the storage room. These are not too expensive. You can get basic ones for $60 to $100 right now. And now, yes, Kathleen might immediately see them and tear them down, but hey, this is actually fine because Ring cameras store their data in the cloud. They are on secure Amazon AWS servers, so you can actually view the footage from your computer and you will see this dumbass stealing the camera and possibly throwing it away, which is kind of, or the packages and throwing them away. It's kind of amazing. She's going to be playing herself. And if you want to go even further, you could also put up a tiny camera that's super inconspicuous. Again, I'm pretty sure your landlord can approve this. They should actually want this. And then you'll catch her red-handed without her knowing. And between those three things, you should have more than enough evidence to take this woman down. And man, that's going to be a great day. Just seeing this brazen thief, who's just frankly an a-hole, watch camera footage of herself stealing your fake broken used Vitamix from the mailroom. Now, it's up to you to decide whether to share this with the landlord or to report it to the police as well. I would do both. My concern is the landlord just gives her a warning. Maybe they just want the stealing to stop without having to create waves and replace a tenant, which is total BS in my opinion. And if you have video and GPS evidence, you probably have a pretty strong case to take to law enforcement. And I think that that's absolutely warranted. By the way, mail theft is also a federal crime. And I'm pretty sure it's a crime in most, if not all states, certainly in California. If the mail was delivered also by the U.S. Postal Service, so not UPS, not FedEx, if it's delivered by the U.S. Postal Service, you can report it to them, and apparently they will investigate this. I've heard this before. The USPS Postal Inspector, they're kind of like the FBI. They are federal agents. They absolutely take this type of thing seriously. I would imagine it'll take them a while because they're probably backed up with reports like this. If the packages were sent by private carriers, you can still report it to the police. It's still a crime. It's still prosecutable. And, you know, they might pick her to go after, given the fact that she also seems to be completely nuts and shooting rounds from her car. They might not go after her for that, but they're going to see that this woman is a menace and this is not some harmless little prank that someone's playing on you.
I was going to say, when she takes all of this evidence to the police, she should also just slide her phone across the table, open to this woman's Instagram account, and just show them the live rounds out of the Corolla. Like, this is the person we're dealing with. Mm-hmm. That could also be evidence, I think. I don't know for sure how that works, but I think the police would be very interested to know that this is the kind of thing this woman is doing. There's one other option here, which is you show the landlord the evidence, you tell them that you're going to contact the police, but that this woman is a danger and a nuisance and she needs to go. And then the landlord can do what apparently many landlords do, which is go to Kathleen directly and say, look here, Kath, we have evidence of you stealing packages. That's a crime. We're giving you a month to move out, or we're going to take this to the police and pursue criminal charges. And she might be so freaked out that she just bounces.
Yeah, I love that idea. I'm sure that works sometimes. I do wonder if that's 100% legal. That would be a great question to ask a landlord-tenant attorney. If anyone listening right now knows the answer to that question, drop us an email. I just worry that that could be construed as unlawful coercion to move out or something like that, like an underhanded eviction without going through proper channels. I don't know. I'm just imagining. Yeah. Also, what you should do is you should go and save that post of hers, of her shooting, using a screen recorder, because she might delete that.
Ooh, good call.
Right. So go in and record that on your own computer.
Right.
Using the web version of Instagram and like a, you know, QuickTime screen recording or something on your computer, because she might clean up her act if she ends up in court, because her lawyer will advise her to delete that stuff. And you might be like, not so fast, Kathleen. I got it right here. Don't worry.
Jordan, I'm worried about what this woman might do to our friend here when she gets busted.
Yeah.
However she ends up getting busted. I mean, like you said, she has a gun. She's physically abusive. It sounds like she has poor impulse control. She doesn't seem to care what people think of her.
Yeah. This is some bipolar disorder type criminal behavior.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm kind of worried for this person.
I totally get it. And by the way, not all BPD is criminal. There's a lot of people who have it. In fact, one of my best friends has it. He's not a criminal that shoots people or puts people in chokeholds. But we were talking with Dr. Shaham Das, and he said that a lot of criminals who have super poor impulse control, they're also BPD. This woman is sort of checking those boxes. But I totally get it. I don't really know what to do about that, but something has to change. This freaking maniac can't just keep stealing this woman's packages and getting away with it. She's going to have to weigh her personal safety against protecting her stuff. I just don't see a way out of this without incurring some personal risk, but I know, it's scary.
But even if this woman gets charged, mail theft is a misdemeanor in most states, right? She might just get slapped with a fine and sent right back to her apartment, but now she's even more pissed and she has it even more out for this woman in particular.
Yeah, it's possible. So maybe your thuggish approach is the right one. Just get this woman out. Although she could still come back, which is terrifying.
Yeah.
I want to say that she could turn to the police for this, but realistically, they're not going to protect her.
No.
They can't camp out outside her door for 6 weeks after they bust this neighbor. If something happens, they're not going to be there. And that is worrisome. What's that phrase that people who are big on Second Amendment love? They're like, your seconds count, but the police are just minutes away. Something like that. It's basically the cops will arrive right after you're dead is the sentiment here. Mm. That's why I think the cameras are the best way to go. I would lean on your landlord to set up a bunch of them in the common areas and let the woman know that everyone in the building is now being surveilled. Mm. Hopefully that will keep her in check.
Although, again, let's remember, this is the woman who is firing her Smith & Wesson through her sunroof on Facebook. So who knows if a couple cameras are really going to stop her.
Yeah, it's a real problem. I mean, jeez, man, this woman is really a tough case. But if she knows the cops might get involved, that could keep her in check. Maybe there's drug abuse going on here. She sounds like a mess. Maybe she thinks she's untouchable.
Well, that gives me one last idea, which is maybe you gather this evidence and you go to Kathleen directly and you say, look, I know what you're doing. I have proof. Here it is. I'm giving you one chance to stop stealing my stuff. And if you don't, I'm going to share this with the police. If you say that in a fairly non-threatening way, just very matter of fact, it might send just the right message. And then, yeah, if it continues, then you can escalate from there if you really need to.
I kind of like that approach. It's a little scary, but I think it strikes a good balance between being tough and diplomatic. Whatever you do, please be safe, take care of yourself, document everything, and enjoy that Vitamix.
The Ferrari of blenders, truly.
That's what I hear. Every vegan needs one, right? So your food tastes less sad.
Yeah, that's right. I think that's actually in the marketing materials. So your food tastes less sad. Vitamix.
Those babies aren't cheap, man. They are not cheap.
No. They are not. The motor has, I believe, 2.2 horsepower, but they're worth every penny.
Yeah. Kathleen can't be enjoying that 2.2 horsepower blender. That is your 2.2 horsepower blender.
That's right.
Ugh, I hate this woman so much. All right. Hope y'all enjoyed that. I want to thank everyone who wrote in this week and everyone who listened. Thank you so much. Go back and check out Dr. Kevin Dutton if you haven't yet. All these people, all these guests I book for the show are in my network, and I'm teaching you how to build your network using the same software, systems, and tiny habits that I use every single day. Check out our 6-minute networking course. The course is free over on the Thinkific platform, jordanharbinger.com/course. I'm teaching you how to dig the well before you get thirsty, build relationships before you need them. Don't try to make them afterwards. You'll be way too late. That's cringe. It's a tail between the legs moment. The drills take a few minutes a day. I wish I knew this stuff 20 years ago. It's been crucial for my business, my personal life. Again, all free, jordanharbinger.com/course. A link to the show notes for the episode can be found at jordanharbinger.com. Transcripts are in the show notes. Advertisers, deals, discounts, all at jordanharbinger.com/deals. I'm at Jordan Harbinger on both Twitter and Instagram, or just connect with me on LinkedIn. You can find Gabe on Instagram at Gabriel Mizrahi or on Twitter at Gabe Mizrahi. This show is created in association with Podcast One. My team is Jen Harbinger, Jace Sanderson, Robert Fogarty, Ian Baird, Emilio Campo, Josh Ballard, and of course, Gabriel Mizrahi. Our advice and opinions are our own, and I'm a lawyer, but I'm not your lawyer. Do your own research before implementing anything you hear on the show. Remember, we rise by lifting others. Share the show with those you love. And if you found this episode useful, please share it with somebody else who can use the advice we gave here today. In the meantime, do your best to apply what you hear on the show so you can live what you listen. And we'll see you next time. If you're looking for another episode of the Jordan Harbinger Show to sink your teeth into, here's a trailer for Firefest's Billy McFarland from inside federal prison, where he's serving 6 years for fraud and on the hook for $26 million in restitution. Here's a quick bite.
You will not be charged for this call. This call is from
William McFarland,
an inmate at a federal prison. Hang up to decline the call or to accept. Dial 5 now.
When I asked before on our first call if you were a con man, we had 10 seconds of silence. Is this the new Billy that we're hearing, or are you the same Billy that tried to pull off the fire festival?
When I think about the mistakes that were made and what happened, there's no way I can just describe it other than, what the fuck was I thinking? I was wrong, and I hope now that I can in some small way make a positive impact.
Once you knew that the festival wasn't going to go as planned, why didn't you call it off?
So a lot of people don't know, but the decision to cancel the festival was made when I was told that 3 people had died at the event. Thankfully, no one was actually physically hurt in any way. But up until the last second, I believed incorrectly we could pull it off, and obviously I was wrong. We had something called the Urgent Daily Payments Document, and basically it was this Google Excel sheet. Essentially, it was a list of payments that we had to make that day, or else the festival couldn't proceed. In the couple of months leading up to the event, it went from a couple $1,000s a day to a few $1,000,000s a day, where I had to wake up at 9 in the morning, find $3 million by noon, and then make the payments by 4.
How is solitary confinement essentially being locked in a box? Like, that sounds terrible.
It really makes you think, and I think the biggest takeaway was, you know, there was one guy who's serving a 30-year sentence, and he was already locked in the same room for over 3.5 years when I was there.
You had a big vision. I mean, it was huge. And you got so close to something great that everyone wanted to be a part of, and people still want to be a part of it. I have to wonder if there's going to be a Firefest version 2. I assume you wouldn't call it that, but are you thinking of doing something similar?
If there's anything that makes you want to create and build and do, it's being locked in a cage for months or years. Are you going to come?
For more with Billy McFarland, including lessons learned on the inside, the value of trust, and Billy's plans for the future once he's served the time he agrees he rightly deserves, check out episode 422 of The Jordan Harbinger Show.